Welcome to the Everything EC podcast. I'm your host, Carla Ward, and fun fact about me, I love to read psychological thrillers and watch cop shows, FBI shows, or anything where there's a psychological mystery to it because I am just fascinated with how the brain works. That being said, I can't do any true crime. It has to be fiction because I just get way too upset. Earlier this year, I started binge watching the show Criminal Minds, which is about a group of criminal profilers who work for the FBI as part of the Behavioral Analysis Unit. In the show, they use behavioral analysis and profiling to investigate crimes and catch serial killers. Now, you might be wondering, what does this have to do with our podcast on early childhood education and the prevention of criminal behavior? Well, stay tuned because the connection might surprise you. Before we proceed with today's episode, I must issue a gentle warning. Today's episode may stir some discomfort as we dive into the unsettling realm of serial killers. I won't be mentioning any specific cases or disturbing incidences, but please prioritize your mental well-being as we navigate through this discussion. I also want to mention that I am not a neuroscientist or a psychologist. The information I relay today regarding the brain and serial killers is based on research. All research articles can be found in our show notes at elfoundations.com/136 if you would like to read further. But let's not wait any longer. Let's dive in. So something that happened in every episode of Criminal Minds when they were searching for a serial killer was they would look back at the criminal's childhood. Now, I am 100% aware that this show is totally fiction. It is not based on any true stories, but as I watched season after season, yes, I did say season, not episode, I couldn't help thinking about why they kept going back to the criminal's childhood. And what did they find almost every time? A recurring pattern of abuse, neglect, or trauma during the formative years. While these characters may be figments of imagination, their fictional narratives prompted me to ask a deeper question. Could there be a link between childhood experiences and criminal behavior? Research in psychology and criminology has long suggested that early experiences play a pivotal role in shaping an individual's trajectory, including their tendency for violence or criminality. This episode is not about excusing atrocious acts, but rather understanding the complex interplay of factors that contribute to such behavior. Imagine a young child, vulnerable and impressionable, growing up in an environment where they are exposed to abuse or neglect. Their developing brain, still malleable and susceptible to external influences, undergoes significant alterations in response to chronic stress or trauma. This can manifest in various ways, from impaired emotional regulation to diminished empathy, factors that are often observed in individuals who later engage in criminal acts. In a TEDx talk by Heather Bryant called "Are Serial Killers Born or Made?" she states that it's a common misconception that all serial killers are born evil and that maybe they're born from extensive trauma. I want to be clear, I am explaining the behavior and am absolutely not excusing it. In her TEDx talk, Heather goes into details about various serial killers and how some of them did not, in fact, show childhood trauma, whereas others suffered extreme abuse. She was actually able or not able to conclude whether serial killers were born or made. Now, Jim Fallon, an American neuroscientist, looked at the actual structure of a serial killer's brain, discovering that they were in fact different from an average person's. Murderers had damage to the orbital cortex and interior part of the temporal lobe. So hearing all this, especially the part about how the actual structure of the brain was different to an average person's, made dots start to connect in my mind. And because I live and breathe early childhood education, and I'm obsessed with children's brain development, I just had to dive into the brain development deeper, specifically the prefrontal cortex. So something that was a real shocker for me as I was doing my research for this podcast was that there is actually a link between traumatic brain injuries and an increased risk of violent behavior. According to the Journal of Neuroscience, the rate of aggression and violence after a TBI ranges from 35% to 90%. If there was ever a sign to make sure children wear helmets, this is it. I used to work with children who had experienced traumatic brain injuries, and while I saw the aggressive behavior, these children were some of the sweetest souls I'd ever met. Many of them did have incredibly supportive families who were helping them navigate their brain injuries. A child with a TBI as a result of abuse who does not get the love and support to heal, especially because TBI can be perceived as an invisible disability, is at a high risk for criminal behavior. Research has also shown that there is a direct relationship between childhood maltreatment and antisocial behavior. Serial killers' thought processes are actually different from the average person, obviously. The reason is that there is decreased connectivity between the brain region that processes negative stimuli, which leads to their behavior. There is low activity on the right side of their brain that is responsible for empathy, morality, and responsibility for their emotions. Brains of murderers show abnormal activity in a variety of brain regions, especially the prefrontal cortex involved with empathy, judgment, and forethought. Again, just because it explains the behavior absolutely does not excuse it. There are plenty of people in this world who have unfortunately experienced trauma as children and have managed not to become serial killers. What I'm trying to say is that serial killers have no remorse or empathy, and this may stem from childhood trauma. Here's where the significance lies and why I felt so compelled to record a podcast episode on this. By nurturing positive environments and providing supportive interventions during the crucial early years, we have the power to mitigate the risk factors associated with future criminality. Early childhood education is not just about ABCs and 1-2-3s. It's about fostering resilience, empathy, and healthy social-emotional development, qualities that serve as protective buffers. Hopefully, we are able to detect if children in our programs are in abusive home situations. As caregivers, advocating for children and helping them get out of those abusive situations is key. Well, actually, first of all, hopefully, none of the children in our programs are facing abuse at all. I certainly wish that for every single child on this planet. But I know over my 19 years as an early childhood educator, the rose-colored glasses have sadly been removed. I've worked with quite a few children under the age of 5 who have come to my programs with a history of abuse. They were either in the foster system or adopted, and their new families were working hard to put support in place. It wasn't easy. This is where my love and passion in the brain really transpires. As I mentioned, the prefrontal cortex involved with empathy, judgment, and forethought is different in a serial killer than in a typically developed person. Regardless of what the future holds for a child, I encourage you as an educator to start paying, if not already, special attention to the development of the prefrontal cortex. The prefrontal cortex is one of the last parts of the brain to mature, and it's usually not until the mid to late 20s. This is the part of the brain we're referring to when we say the brain isn't fully developed till 25. But here's the thing. Between 3 and 5 years old, the prefrontal cortex circuits enter a rapid period of development and make crucial interconnections with the limbic system, which is the part of the brain involved in our behavioral and emotional responses. Later on, as the child grows into the teenage years and early adulthood, the neural pathways are refined and become more efficient. But this doesn't mean we can't start supporting the development of the prefrontal cortex in the early years. Like I said, between 3 and 5, there is a rapid development. Recent studies demonstrate that the impacts of early adverse environments on the prefrontal cortex are present in as early as the first year of life. Infant behavioral, infant neuroimaging, and non-human primate lesion studies demonstrate that infant prefrontal cortex supports early executive function development. So even though the prefrontal cortex is the last to fully mature, we can kind of reword that to say it takes the longest to fully develop, implying that it is developing from day one. Now, since I am discussing the connection between serial killers and the importance of early childhood education, the good news is that since the prefrontal cortex plays a role in some of the more complex human cognitive functions that must be learned during infancy and early childhood, it is intuitive that the region is highly sensitive to modification of the early environment. If there was ever a case and point to make about the importance of early childhood education and its educators, this is it. We can't always control the environment children are born into. Still, in our programs, we can build programs that are positive environments that convey the maximum potential for the child's developing brain. When I refer to the environment, I'm not just referring to the setup within the four walls. I'm also speaking about the educator within those walls, and that's you. The way we treat children in our programs is so important. Does that mean that if we're not on our top-notch game one day, we're contributing to a child becoming a serial killer? Of course not. And please don't think for a second I'm implying that we are responsible for that at all. But we have the power as educators to impact and change a child's course for the future in such a grand way that I don't even think we realize it sometimes. If we take an interest in the brain development and the importance of it, I feel like it makes educating so much easier because it makes the big picture clearer. If we know that part of what we're doing is developing different areas of the brain, play and the reason for play makes so much more sense. Since the prefrontal cortex plays a crucial role in any child's development, something that we can do in our program to support that development are things like memory games. One of my favorite games to play with toddlers, preschoolers, and my kindergartners is the What's Missing game. Depending on the age of the child, you put some items on a tray. For toddlers, I would say only do a max of 3, and with kindergartners, I've gone as high as 10 items. Let the child or children look at the tray, talk about the items, then cover it with a cloth. Have the children close their eyes and remove one of the items from the tray. Then have them try to figure out which one is missing. Children love this game so much, and it's developing that prefrontal cortex. Other games to support the development of the prefrontal cortex are puzzles and word games. These exercises can encourage neuroplasticity, which is our brain's ability to create and reinforce essential interconnections. So while we can't go back in time and undo some children's past for them, we can build environments for them that help them develop key components of their brain, help them build resiliency, and strengthen their social-emotional skills. By acknowledging the correlation between childhood trauma, brain development, and antisocial behavior, we can empower ourselves as educators and caregivers to intervene positively in the lives of vulnerable children, thereby hopefully preventing future criminal behavior. Early childhood education, therefore, is not just a platform for academic learning, but also a foundation of hope and resilience building. By creating nurturing environments, offering supportive interventions, and engaging in activities that foster neuroplasticity and social-emotional growth, we become agents of change in shaping brighter futures for the children in our care. As we navigate the complexities of early childhood development, let us remember the profound impact we have in sculpting the minds and hearts of the next generation. Through our dedication, compassion, and understanding of the brain's remarkable capacity for change, we pave the way for a world where every child has the opportunity to thrive and fulfill their potential. Thank you so much for joining me on today's podcast. I know it was slightly off-brand from our normal episodes, but I absolutely love the brain and found the research for this episode fascinating. You can find all the research I used in our show notes at elfoundations.com/136. And if you did enjoy the episode, please make sure to like this podcast on the app you're listening to. Bye for now.